Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always say this about my special guest, but it's not a special guest this week. But before we can work out who it is, should we have a word from one of our sponsors? If you're down the rabbit hole, which you probably are, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this podcast, you've probably gone through your medicine cabinets and your bathroom cabinets and chucked out all the big pharma evil product, and you've replaced them with natural products, like the stuff that I've got in my cabinets, which is from Brand Zero. If you've been to any of my live events, you may even have seen the Brand Zero stall run by the lovely Sasha, and it sells all manner of stuff that you actually want in your home and to put on your skin. Pain balm, arnica gel, dagmus honey from Morocco. Well, actually, that's more for eating than putting on your skin. CBD hot chocolate, magnesium butter, organic bee pollen, beeswax balms. Nice stuff. There's a good story about how the company started. It was during the pandemic, and all the people having to put on these horrible hand sanitizers were getting their skin all cracked and dry and horrible. And Sasha had this great idea of having a sort of fundraiser to provide local nurses near Stroud, where she lives, with soothing beeswax balm. So it was just a kind of altruistic gesture. And over 1,000 nurses and carers across the Stroud area ended up getting these soothing beeswax balms. And this developed into a business of massage oils, bath oils, shampoo bars, aromatherapy oils, organic handmade soaps, and so on. All of it made with natural ingredients, no nasties, no cruelty to animals. And now Brand Zero Naturals is going great guns. So you can find them at brandzeronaturals.co.uk. That's brandzeronaturals.co.uk. I love their stuff, and they're really popular as well. Loads of people buy their stuff. I think you'll like them if you don't use their stuff already. brandzeronaturals.co.uk. And welcome to the Delling Pod, Dick, not a special guest.
I am fresh from a telling off from your host, because you know what I did? I broke the golden rule. I had a pre-conversation, a pre-podcast conversation, and I started to touch on subjects which might be a gold mine of laughs and bon mot.
You just came in with your giant digger and sort of trashed all the seams that I was going to get my little team of dwarves to go and, you know, to mine properly with their beards and their pickaxes and stuff.
As dwarves do.
Well, yeah. They do in the mines of
Moria.
Right. Yes.
What I was talking about
speak
was
friend and enter. What was it called?
What?
Speak friend.
Speak friend and enter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Carry on.
So what I was suggesting, what I pointed out, the sound quality issues on the recent guest, J.R. Sweet.
J.R. Sweet.
Now I don't know. I was looking for the comments below, and I thought immediately everyone's going to say, do something about bloody sound. But no, they will go, what a fascinating interview. And I was thinking, had they not noticed that you have to turn James's part right down and then JR Sweet, you have to turn up to full just to hear what he's saying?
Okay, I get this, but think about it. If you're listening to a podcast about a guy who was trained as an Illuminati assassin after his earlier period as a child porn star, forced to do this by his family, and then he witnessed the most evil satanic ritual you can imagine, and he was hunted down in a child hunting expedition which also included Paris Hilton, you kind of see why people are going to be focusing on the content rather than the delivery.
I've seen you interrupt people midstream saying, can you do something about your sound or your internet connection or whatever?
But I try to. Yeah, I do. I try and do my best. Okay, look, if people can help me, I'm happy to do it. We've got a gardener now.
Right.
I mean, not every day, obviously. And do you know what his name is?
Chance the gardener.
No, he's not called Chance. No, he's not. No, have another guess. Thinking about yourself more.
Is he called Dick?
Yes. And I've told him we can't call him Dick because it's too close to to home.
Yeah.
So he's called, guess what we call him?
Richard.
Yes. Exactly. So we call him Richard.
Some people call me.
So Richard came and he was listening to one of my podcasts today and he said, oh, you need to get yourself a camera. And I said, yeah, Richard, maybe I do, but I hate that kind of thing. And because I'll have to learn stuff to do to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't be doing that. And he said, no, you can probably do stuff like you can use your iPhone as a camera. And I said, I'm not going to research how to do that. He said, well, couldn't you, you've got downtime, couldn't you? And I said, no, I find it boring. And he said, well, I don't find it boring. I said, well, you do it then. You do my research for me and tell me what to do and I'll do it. And same with anyone listening to this. Look, anyone can make my job, make the podcast production better without me having to, I'm happy to write a check. That's fine. I just don't want anything that involves me having to learn stuff.
What if the camera was just a simple matter of plug it in and it just takes over from your previous embedded camera and your thing? I mean, I'm sure that would be a start, wouldn't it?
Do you know how impatient I am, Dick?
Yes, I do know how impatient you are.
I just want to give an indication of this. I would even find the act of having to put my iPhone on a tripod on my desk, even that very act would drive me insane.
If you were a social media influencer, you'd have one of those circular lights. They all have those. And the camera sits in the middle of and things like that.
Do they?
But they're all fully equipped, these kids, well, these days.
I mean, I'm happy to get a circle of lights with a camera in the middle.
No, I don't think it works for the interview format. I think it's more for a piece to camera. But anyway.
I can do pieces to camera, but I prefer the conversation format.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what your best.
It's what I was born. It's what God made me for.
Yes,
it's interesting.
That and falling off horses.
If that is the case, falling off horses. If God was still like making us all, and he said, "I shall now invent the peacock with his fine tail feathers, and I shall invent Leviathan, sea Leviathan in his ocean lair." And I will make all this cool stuff in the world, and man shall delight in my creation. Now, let us create the characters, the individual characters. I am going to make Alexander the Great, and he will conquer many...
I can see where this is going.
Many nations. I will invent Dick. I will give him some splendid moustaches. And then I need a podcaster. I need somebody who does digressive conversations. Who can that be? I know.
Trigonometry.
Yes.
They will have great equipment and fantastic backgrounds.
I shall make the one that looks like something out of a Gerry Anderson animation. And I will make sure... Even though he is supposedly a comedian, he will never say anything funny. God, why is
or
God
anything
talking like
at
this?
All? God, well, I don't know, because he is God and he has a deep voice.
God is mighty. Well, and I am going to make the one from the Ukrainian one. I shall make him shill for Israel and come up with all sorts of establishment bullshit, and people shall hate him.
And great shall be the hatred.
Great shall be the... They shall hate him like Moloch and Baal.
Talking of godly language, you know, some time ago you gave me the Coverdale Psalter.
Yes.
Okay, so... And you were saying, oh, you'll have great fun with that, Dick. And for ages, it just sat on my shelf. Now, I'm just going to grab it now.
Dick.
Because it now lives in my icon corner, which is just over
there.
Oh,
good. Yes.
And so there it is.
That makes me happy.
Very simple cover.
Yeah.
And even got the tunes, which I think is more pertinent to orthodoxy than I would have ever thought. But because when you're doing your prayers, you're chanting them. You're chanting out loud, generally.
Right.
You generally have to chant your psalms. But on the godly language bit, Coverdale is slightly more challenging than KJV, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that one step further to
it's
more
like
50 archaic
years
language.
Earlier.
And how many years?
About 50.
Right. Early enough to notice a difference. And sometimes it is the words that trip you up. And I'm reading them out loud. The way I do it, I've got a morning prayer routine, which looks like this. Okay. That yeah. bit is the creed.
Yeah.
But this bit is prayers, including repeated Lord have mercies and crossing yourself, various other things. So you're chanting the whole thing.
Yeah.
Then you're saying the creed. And then, as part of morning prayers, it's a psalm. Now, I have been doing this. I've been going, right, today I'm going to go for something near the beginning.
Yeah.
So I will do that. And okay, it's fallen on Psalm 10. And I'll check it briefly to check it's not 40 pages. And, you know, I haven't gone by 119 by mistake. Psalm 10, it's 2 pages. It's a good one. And I treat that as a way of God maybe being able to deliver me a message in the form of the psalm. And, but the, okay, I'm just looking at this word, whom God abhorreth. I mean, you don't see abhorreth anymore, do you?
Abhor,
I mean,
yeah.
it's, so you'll come to the words and you'll sort of, when you're saying them out loud, it's very different to just reading it to yourself. So it's very good practice for the whole biblical speak type thing. And I have got to love the whole Coverdale language and the just the words
look
being used.
Look up while you've got it there, so I don't have to go and get my copy. My copy, by the way, is I've used it so much.
Very dog-eared, I'd have thought.
It's dog-eared and the paper started to smell of as it does when you keep touching paper again
right.
and again and again. Go to Psalm 104.
Yep.
And go to the end of it, the last page of Psalm 104.
Gosh, it's a four-pager.
And read the bit about Leviathan.
I haven't encountered Leviathan.
It's about a third of the way down.
Oh, right. So is the great and wide sea also, wherein are things creeping innumerable, or like that. We've always felt that about the sea, haven't we?
Yeah,
when you're swimming in it, there are
yeah.
things creeping innumerable.
Yeah.
Both small and great beasts. There go the ships, and there is that Leviathan, whom thou hast made to take his pastime therein. I love the fact that Leviathan is taking his pastime
isn't
therein.
Isn't it great?
He's
isn't
just great? Doing oh, stuff,
just
you know, doing Leviathan stuff.
Just go to, the second page's worth of it, about the lions.
What bit earlier on?
Yeah. Actually, no. It's the third page of it's at the bottom.
There's going wild goats. It's got the storm.
The
darkness. The lions roaring after their prey do seek their meat from God. The sun ariseth, and they get them away together, and lay them down in their dens. Man goeth forth to his work and to his labour until the evening. O Lord, how manifold are thy works, etc., etc.
I think Psalm 104 is one of the best ones, and it's interesting. I'm saving up. When I was in Russia, we went to this monastery, and I met Father Pantaleimon, who I think is the abbot of this monastery. And I don't know how good his English is, but I'm going to do a psalm with him. And I asked him which psalm he wanted to do. And I thought he'd said a different psalm, but when I checked with him the other day, he named this psalm. And I thought, yeah, you're
so
a
did he, which number did he give? He gave a number that's one more than...
Exactly, or one less.
I can't remember which way
around
it.
I had to check with him what the psalm was about. And I was thinking, you're a real psalm connoisseur, aren't you? Of course you would be. I mean, you think if you're a monk, you'd be, duh. But but I thought, good choice, Pantaleimon. I wanted to mention another thing to you about this. So I'm also reading the Philokalia. You know what the Philokalia is?
I don't know what the Philokalia is.
Philokalia is when you become a sort of even more of an ortho bro than you are already. The Philokalia is the kind of the teachings of the Desert Fathers, I think from about the 3rd century to about the 8th century. So there are various, there's Philokalia 1, Philokalia 2, 3, 4, 5. The later editions are from later on in the teachings of the Desert Fathers or whatever, or other monks and things. But this is the ones who went out to the desert to live in caves and things, and it's their wisdom and their teachings. And when I was at Abbot Pantaleimon's monastery, we were having dinner with the bishop and stuff like that, and I was very conscious that the place was swarming with bloody mosquitoes, as like Russia is. And this was in the non-mosquito season. And I said to, when you're asking, you know, ask us any questions you like after dinner, I was like, well, what do you do about the mosquitoes? And Father Pantaleimon said that they didn't bother him. And I was thinking, how can they not bother you when you're in Mosquito Central? Anyway, I was reading through the Philokalia, and the monk was talking about how to pray and how to basically, when you're praying, what state of mind you need to be in to pray. You've got to be pure. You can't allow yourself to be distracted. You can't allow yourself to be too pleased with yourself. So, you know, you can, one mistake is to have polluting thoughts about, I don't know, food or sex or whatever. But another polluting thought is to think that you're being too good, because that also is an error. And then you've got all the demons taking advantage of any
chink in your armor.
Any chink in your armor, the demons are right in there. But if you get it right, the angels are there to take charge of you and keep you in all your ways. Anyway, on this list of about 150 rules for praying, there was something like do not get bothered by mosquitoes. So I was lying in bed the other night, and I mean, look what time of year it is. It is. We're talking. Is it? It's not even March, is it? Or is it just
it is March? Yeah,
just gone March. But hardly mosquito time of year, and I could hear this whining, or I thought I could hear this whining, and I thought that mosquito, if it is a mosquito, could easily keep me awake all night. And then I thought, but if I were an Orthodox monk in the desert, there wouldn't have been a distinction between Orthodox, because they were just monks then.
Just monks.
If I'd been the Desert Father, how would I treat that mosquito? And I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to say, thank you, God, for providing this mosquito to test me and to allow me to overcome this mosquito problem. So I'm going to, and I sort of, I prayed through it, and I went to sleep. So
brilliant! That is so ortho.
Yeah,
you're better at the ortho thing than me. And I know you're not going to necessarily make the leap, because you're happy enough with your quite excellent local churches, and that's exactly
they need
the way
me,
it should
Dick.
Be.
They need me.
What, sorry,
but yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I look. I think I'm not of a mind that I've got an awful lot to learn from the current Church of England as it is. I mean, I've got stuff to learn from I don't know, Cranmer, and from Miles Coverdale and stuff, the people who sort of helped make the church, and I don't know, George Herbert and stuff. But I don't think I'm not going to be thinking, oh, I wonder what Welby's take is on this.
Said no one ever.
Said no one. Oh, I wonder what the new Archbishop, whatever her name is, the woman, the woman priest.
Woman McWoman face.
Woman. I'm sure she's going to, probably I should learn to be more caring. And I don't know. I just don't. But I have got much to learn from Orthodox monks and from Catholic, you know, gurus and things. And well, not that, I suppose technically they're not called gurus, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
What was I saying? Yeah, so I just, this is why I'm interested. Actually, Tanya has been very good at this. I mean, Tanya is so fiercely intelligent and well-read. Hmm. Tanya Edwards, you know, like honorary dick, female dick. So she turns me on to all these different key texts, and the Philokalia is one. Although, have you read The Way of a Pilgrim yet?
No, oh. I've got such a long reading list to come to. I was very grateful though for those two books you gave me at our last podcast live event, and I consumed them like drinking a long cool drink. It was just, I didn't realize how quickly I was going to get through them, but they're absolutely brilliant and have now been passed the one back to you, the Saint Paisios one.
Yes,
but the Russian one I have lent to a really lovely young couple in my church who bulked a bit at the expense of how much it would have cost to get that book on Amazon, but I've lent it to him and he's really, really happy with it. And he's reporting back to me on the things that have really struck him as brilliant. But you've done God's work there in passing those books to me. So that was really good early reading. And just in case our listeners are wondering, that was Everyday Saints and Other Stories. What is it? Everyday Saints and Other Stories.
Oh, I just call it Everyday Saints.
It's the Russian one, basically. It's with the Russian Orthodox chaps.
What I've worked out is that when you get sort of more advanced on your sort of Christian path, that God gives you less obvious rewards. Like, for example, he will allow you to have your, unfortunately, he won't protect you from having your finger broken when you're hunting.
As you found out to your cost.
I thought you had my back.
God, what is this?
What is this? But what he does do is he gives you the pleasure of hearing stories like that, of just helping people, of just like doing good things and virtue being its own reward and all that. Mm. I mean, I get this from Michelle, for example, who Ostia Michelle, who's she says, look, I've had some more people who've come to me via you and I've helped them and their lives have been transformed and they've been healed and the terrible things had happened to them and now they're better or they're on the way. And I say, well, that's you, Michelle. It's not me. No, she said, no, they wouldn't have come to me without you. And I think, well, that's nice of you. Yeah, I suppose
it's absolutely true, but you just take great joy in it. It's not something that we would have necessarily done 20 years ago. It would be, no, that's nice, but actually,
no, we used to go around killing people. but that's the old us.
Yeah, but we wouldn't have appreciated the ripple effect. And the ripple effect is tremendously underrated unless you look for it. It's a bit like knowing the difference between a coincidence and God sending you a message. And obviously, there's rather more less of the one and rather more of the other.
That's true. I think the non-believers think it's all, it's just a coincidence. And in fact, that's the phrase they've been given by the godless. Yeah. It's just a coincidence. When can I tell you about my hospital experiences?
Let's launch into it now in true interrupt ourselves style.
So you can see, Dick, that I'm a very sorry sight.
Yes.
I haven't shaved.
And I only learned about this yesterday.
I know. Well, you're the last to know, aren't you? But we've got the podcast now. You can learn now.
Yeah. We can all learn together.
So, as you know, I broke my finger when I was hunting, which is obviously going to be my last hunt this year, but possibly ever, actually, if they ban it. And I did it on the neck strap or maybe on the reins. The horse was a racehorse and was pulling, and I had no brakes, and he was pulling so hard that my finger broke or something happened anyway. Luckily, I carried on hunting for 2 hours. Because I could so arrange my finger.
Did we cover the actual riding and the braking in our last chat, or is that something we did?
Maybe
offline?
We did.
Okay, so because that's the last I knew of it, and the assumption was that your finger would heal.
So I thought. So I went into hospital, had it looked at, and they said, "Oh yes, well, it might need a pin." And I thought, I don't want to pin, because that will involve surgery, and I've already got enough metal in me, and I don't like having metal in me. I wish I'd never had it put in. And I said to them, well, is there any way round this? And they said, well, let's take a view. Let's have a look at it. Anyway, so I had a look at the X-ray, and this is the consultant, not me. They rang. I was all ready to have the pin put in reluctantly. And then another consultant breezed past, as they probably do in hospitals, and sort of glanced at my thing and said, "Ah, oh, no, that," he said, "that'll probably heal. Put a splint on it and it'll be fine." So I left it for 3 weeks or whatever, 4 weeks, and went in for my checkup. And like 4 weeks, it should be starting to knit and everything. It should be like you're well on the way to recovery. It takes 6 weeks normally. And I went in, and the doctors said the thing you don't want to hear. They said, and they looked at showed me the X-ray. This is the one before, and this is you, and that was bad enough. And this is you now. And I could see that the break had gone from sort of there to there. Oh. And there was no joiny stuff.
Best when your bones join up.
Mm. And I said, well, isn't that a bit worrying? Because aren't the bones, like, isn't it time?
There's a song about them all being connected.
Isn't it time sensitive? And they said, well, yes, it is. You really do need a sort of emergency surgery. So we'll try.
That's
and
never get two words you want to hear together.
No, I
it?
Know. So they we'll try and get you into Mr. So-and-so's clinic in 2 days' time. Oh no, looks like the lists are all full. We'll try and see if orthopedic have got anything. I said, are they as good? And they're just as good. But they hadn't got anything either. So I was waiting anxiously. And anyway, yesterday, they told me to drive in. They told me to arrive there by 7:30 in the morning. I suppose because anaesthetics and stuff. And I was quite gung-ho and about it all and quite blasé. I thought, well, they've told me that I won't be able to drive home. And I thought, sod that. Of course I'm going to be able to drive home. I'm me. I can drive home. I'm not going to get the wife to have to come all the way to this hospital to take me home. So they said in the morning, this is a rare moment when I lie. They said, and who's coming to pick you up? And I said, oh, my wife will come and pick me up. I said, thinking, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And then the anaesthetist comes to see me, and he says, are you going to have your finger... your finger frozen or your whole arm? I said, I don't know. I haven't seen the consultant and so or the surgeon or whatever. He said, well, we'll wait and see. And then he came and said, we're doing your arm. We're going to block your arm, which means that they freeze the whole of your arm. And he said, you're not going to be able to drive home. I thought, yeah, okay, I'm not going to be able to drive home. I go into the... In my imagination, before this happened, I thought it was going to be like me, a nurse, and the surgeon with a, you know, like in a
room. Your hand just on a little table, maybe.
Yeah, on a table, exactly. Yeah. Squidging it, yeah, and there you are, off you go. No, it was the full operating thing, the anaesthetic beforehand, and they went with a camera into the veins underneath my armpit, and I suddenly went as they triggered some a nerve cluster and
my arm starting to hurt just thinking about it.
Anesthetic department, there were five people, a team of five people in there, all looking around, and I could only distract them myself by talking to them about conspiracy stuff. They said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I do podcasts. I do I do conspiracy podcasts. Oh, is it successful? I said, well, it would be a lot more successful if my numbers weren't limited by the powers that be, because they don't want this stuff getting out. Oh, what's your favourite conspiracy? Well, where do you want to start? Say, well, what happened to Diana? Well, she was murdered on the orders of the Duke of Edinburgh in the tunnels, because that was a Merovingian burial ground, a Merovingian tomb. And what about Madeleine McCann? I said, well, there are two theories on Madeleine McCann. Either she didn't actually die and was just invented to push the whole child tracking devices and general populist paranoia and stuff, or she was part of a sort of child sex abuse ring. And how do I avoid paying my taxes? Ah, yes, that's a really tricky one. I know what you mean. And this one of the anaesthetists was completely awake, or was on the I don't want to pay my council tax to be spent on paedophiles and missiles.
Yeah,
she was on that. So they were. I didn't do why the NHS is evil, but I'd done that earlier to the Cameroonian nurse in the waiting room. I said, you know, I don't mind hospitals for breakages and things like this, but I said, I really wouldn't, if I had cancer, I said, I wouldn't come and sit in your cancer treatment place and be injected by chemo. And she said, oh, why not? I said, because, well, let me tell you the history of Rockefeller medicine. So I told her the history of Rockefeller medicine, and I said, and the vaccines, I mean, they're death jabs. You know that, don't you? And she said, well, we had to take the vaccine. She said, I didn't want to. I said, yeah, well, that's exactly it. You didn't, did you? She said, no. She said, they told us that we'd lose our jobs if we didn't take the vaccine. And I was very upset about it. This is a Cameroonian nurse. Hmm. You know, she wasn't stupid. She complained about how her son had taken the vaccine to go traveling and stuff. So it's quite interesting. They have a sort of... they know what's going on, but at the same time, they're part of the kill machine system. That
yeah, but you've got to have a little bit of sympathy for the fact that the way they were trained was to be bombarded with information, all of which they had to take on board without questioning it. They're not taught to question things, are they?
It's very weird being awake and going to. I mean, this is a very a decent. Teaching hospital. And by the way, I'll tell you about that in a moment. But if you're awake and you go into one of these institutions, you have very mixed feelings. On the one hand, I was really very impressed by the professionalism and of the whole team looking after me. And the nurses were great, and the surgeon was great, and treatment was top notch. At the same time, you know that hospitals exist and TV propaganda like Scrubs exist basically to feed fodder into the kill machine. Mm-hmm. And they're part of the culling mechanism, very important part of the culling mechanism. So it's weird being in this kind of charnel house of cabal death, while at the same time being somewhere which is actually going to save your ass, or in this case, my fingertip, because some stuff does work.
Yeah. But isn't that just like a sort of analogy for the life that we're all living anyway? We're all living in enemy territory, and we're in the middle of a war, whether we acknowledge it or not. And we're having to play by their rules to a certain extent, but we're like resistance within occupied France. You know, it's sort of, it's not a life of living among people who have our best interests at heart, who with the system that wants to keep us alive. So our lives are like that every day. It's just that when you go into a hospital, you're further into the belly of the beast.
Yes. So although the Germans are technically our enemy most of the time, they can be useful to us if we want to steal their rifles,
yeah,
or their bratwurst.
Or there might be a few of them that are sympathetic to the resistance.
There might be. They might provide us with passport.
Yep.
Happier. I don't know. Or there might be some fit German secretaries that we want to have affairs with. I don't know. Yes. I'm just trying to go with your
analogy. You've overthought this one.
No. So I then get into the operating area when my arm is, it is so weird, Dick. It is like having, it's as if Burke and Hare have arrived and they've attached one of their corpse's arms to my, to where my arm used to be. And there's this sort of heavy thing that just, and they put up this sheet over me so I can't see what's going on. And I can hear their commentary. And surgeons, I mean, even with sort of minor operations like this, they're kind of doing it on a wing and a prayer. So they say, look, we might have to go in with a knife and really it'd be a bit messy.
But did they not go in with a knife?
No, they didn't.
Oh.
They do. What they did was, first of all, they squeezed the bone. They put your hand underneath an X-ray. And they manipulate the bone back into place, and then they get a drill, and they drill this titanium wire through the tip of your finger, through the bone to, yeah, I know. And you can hear this, dzz, dzz, but you can't feel anything. You don't, you just, it could be happening to somebody else. And, but you hear the commentary, and yeah, exactly. And the.
Global warming is a massive con. There is no evidence whatsoever that man-made climate change is a problem, that it's going to kill us, that we need to amend our lifestyle in order to deal with it. It's a non-existent problem. But how do you explain this stuff to your normie friends? Well, I've just brought out the revised edition of my 2012 classic book, Watermelons, which captures the story of how some really nasty people decided to invent the global warming scare in order to fleece you, to take away your freedoms, to take away your land. It's a shocking story. I wrote it, as I say, in 2011, actually, the first edition came out. And it's a snapshot of a particular era, the era when the people behind the climate change scam got caught red-handed, tinkering with the data, torturing till it screamed, in a scandal that I helped christen ClimateGate. So I give you the background to the skullduggery that went on in these seats of learning where these supposed experts were informing us, we've got to act now. I rumbled their scam. I then asked the question, okay, if it is a scam, who's doing this? And why? It's a good story. I've kept the original book pretty much as is, but I've written two new chapters, one at the beginning and one at the end, explaining how it's even worse than we thought. I think it still stands up. I think it's a good read. Obviously I'm biased, but I'd recommend it. You can buy it from jamesdellingpole.co.uk/shop. You'll probably find that. Just go to my website and look for it, jamesdellingpole.co.uk. And I hope it helps keep you informed and gives you the material you need to bring round all those people who are still persuaded that, oh, it's a disaster, we must amend our ways and appease the gods, appease Mother Gaia. No, we don't. It's a scam.
An X-ray. And they manipulate the bone back into place, and then they get a drill, and they drill this titanium wire through the tip of your finger, through the bone to, yeah, I know. And you can hear this, dzz, dzz, but you can't feel anything. You don't, you just, it could be happening to somebody else. And, but you hear the commentary, and yeah, exactly. And it was clear to me that although I clearly had a top consultant, he was training somebody else to do it. And I was thinking, right. I don't want to trainee. But at the same time, A, it's a teaching hospital. So that's what you get in teaching hospitals. And B, and you only get the best. But B, I was thinking, well, actually, they've got to learn somehow. And how are they going to learn if they're
that's
not doing
very public spirited of you.
Yeah, but I think you do kind of think that a bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, luckily, the person who was being trained...
Was this like, you've ever done one of these before? No. Do you want to have a go? Yeah, why not? What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. But the good thing was, they didn't have to go in with a knife.
And
there was a point where, as well.
The worst bit actually, the
scalpel,
was where the anaesthetist, because they have a cannula in your other arm, so that they can, if anything goes wrong, or they can pump, you know,
knock you out straight away,
calming fluid in you straight away, exactly.
Yeah, get the midazolam.
Midazolam. Quickly, nurse, warm midazolam. They didn't say that.
Oh, I think you need ventilating. Words you don't want to hear.
Yeah. And they said, oh, by the way, we've just put in 3 years worth of COVID shots, because we noticed from your notes.
We noticed it was severely lacking on your notes. We've given you all three varieties just to cover off all the bases.
Micron, the...
Is that all right? Yeah.
Oh, do you not see? That was what, that form you signed, the consent form. Said. No, they did put in some antibiotics,
right?
Which I was not happy with. And I tried to resist. I said, oh, no, I don't want those, thanks. And the surgeon said, you jolly well are, because we don't want you to get sepsis.
Oh, right.
And I was thinking...
Oh, we're a doctor now, are we?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, when you're in that situation, when you're kind of on an operating table and you've got all this team around you, you're much more vulnerable to suggestions and things than you are.
Well, you're outnumbered for a start, aren't you?
I was heavily outnumbered. They were asking me questions about horses and about the cost of hiring horses. I didn't tell them I was actually done it. I didn't tell them the exact circumstances in which I...
Foxes weren't mentioned.
I just thought, yeah.
Best not
somebody,
to.
some complete twat of a. I did a podcast with Germ Warfare the other day.
Yeah,
and I think we were talking about hunting and stuff. And Germ was asking me about it, and there was some creature on Facebook saying, how can you participate in this? How can you talk so favourably about this barbaric sport? Barbaric blood sport, whatever. I am not going to listen to either of your podcasts ever again. And I was thinking, madam, I would like to refer you to my article, The World is Run by Satanists and You're Worried About Fox Hunting. I don't get annoyed by idiots much, because if you did that, you'd get annoyed all the time. But for anyone who claims to be awake, anyone who knows what's going on in the world, the world is run by Satanists who sacrifice children to Satan literally, and drink their blood, and harvest their adrenochrome, and cause wars that result in the deaths of millions of people because it's part of their business model. And you're thinking, yeah, but my job is to make sure that people who live in the country can't enjoy a pursuit that is a combination of controlling a pest in the kindest way, better than shooting them all, which is the alternative, and which binds communities, and which provides money to people, and gives pleasure to people, not bloodlust pleasure, but just the joy of being outdoors, and the joy of wearing nice clothes, and the joy of doing exciting, dangerous things on horses, and the joy of working with hounds and working with animals, and you're sitting there thinking, I want to stop this because I don't know anything about it, and it makes me angry, and it's far, far worse than Satanists running the world. No, it's not, madam, miss, whatever you are, whatever gender you decided you are. It really isn't. Anyway, that made me cross.
People do get animated about, yeah, seriously.
The other thing is, I'm thinking, I'm not listening to reasoned argument there. What I'm listening to is somebody who's been programmed by the animal rights lobby, which in turn was programmed and funded by Satanists. That's the thing. Mm. The Satanists fund the animal rights lobby. And you're thinking that you're being autonomous here, and that these thoughts you've reached yourself, and because you care about, you don't know anything about it, and yet you are judging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there. Anyway, so I then, it's horrible having a cast on. It's horrible.
So hang on, look, finish up the, how did you get home in the end? Did you get collected?
Well, there was no way I was going to drive home. It was absolute. Haven't we got? Does Jason have one arm? No. He's just paraplegic, isn't he?
Yeah.
Just paraplegic. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I have great respect to people with physical disabilities who are yet able to operate cars and things. Because I tell you, you need both. In a normal car, you need both arms, really.
So there was a complicated swapping of cars and to-ing and fro-ing after that, then, presumably.
And then I tried to sleep last night, avoiding painkillers, because I don't like...
You were straight out of hospital, were you? You weren't overnight or anything like that?
No, straight out of hospital. So I came home, she got driven by my wife, and I don't like ibuprofen because it sort of produces all these kind of gastric juices, I find. It makes you all sort of feel horrible. And paracetamol damages your liver, doesn't it? So I was thinking, I'm going to try and tough it out. I did try and duke it out, and I went to sleep fine, but then I got woken up by a nightmare in which my hand was burning with pain, and I woke up to find it was indeed burning with pain.
Right.
And...
Because it was starting to come back with feeling.
Yeah. And I tell you what it... Yeah, exactly. I tell you what it feels like. It feels exactly as you would expect it to feel if someone were to drive a titanium... Wire
through the tip of your finger
to the beginning of the next joint. That's how it feels, and it's there all the time. But it's no worse than that. It is just as bad as that, but no worse.
Right. And you've got a metal hook protruding from the end of your finger.
There's a hook. I can almost show you. If I
That's the shittest Abu Hamza I've ever seen.
It's shit. You see the finger attached to it?
Oh, I can't see any finger, no. I've only got your word that that's coming out of the tip of your finger.
It is. I am shit. I am pound shot Abu Hamza.
Credit to Ivo for that joke. Of course, he put it on the family group chat, a picture of aforementioned cleric.
Ivo is shit at most things, but one thing he is good at is just taking the piss.
It's all he does, though. It's a full-time job for him.
It's all he does.
It's all he does. Every single conversation. He's like a monstrous version of you.
Yeah. He is. So I'm Frankenstein, and he's my monster.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, because you've got the son that you would have designed on paper. You'd have written down something like, just like me, but even funnier. And there he is.
Well, he's the reason that I'm doing this. I'm trying to learn Russian again. I mean, I tried on Duolingo. And gave up because it's just so hard. And those letters, I mean, they're a real pain. And they do things like they have lots of vowels together. It's very hard for us to get used to that. Lots of consonants.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be as bad as having lots of consonants.
Loads of consonants that you have to grapple with. And there's sort of noises that we... Sounds that we don't really make it. Oh, the rolling of the rolled R, which I've never been able to do. Never been able to roll an R.
Having had a mild lisp all my life, I'm kind of like, forget about it when it comes to actually rolling an R. Almost the anti-lisp.
So you think, okay, but I can deal with this. I can somehow manage the roll, all the consonants and the roll R's and the weird alphabet. And you think, I'll get past. And then you discover how heavily inflected Russian is. I mean, the grammar is... I thought German was bad. It's just... And all
what
the
do you mean by how heavily inflected?
Well, it's got masculine... It's like Latin. It's got masculine, feminine neuter, and the adjective endings change according to what gender it is. And there's even... There's different types of words for and... Depending on the kind of connection that is being made, there are all these complicated. And you're thinking, hang on a second, I love Russia and I love the Russians and their literature, what I read in translation. But surely this language, which was basically a peasant language until it was sort of discovered by the aristocracy in the 19th century. Before that, they all spoke French. But this language, why is it so complicated? Why?
So Dostoevsky was writing in the same Russian that you're...
No, he wrote in Polish.
Did he?
Was he rich?
What? No. Don't do that to me.
Yeah, he read in Russian. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, they'd all been brought up by their nannies, who were probably English, and their parents spoke to them in French, and then suddenly they discovered the Russian language, and they created all this great literature. It was quite an achievement.
Right. Yeah. Blimey. Have you thought of doing ancient Greek instead?
I have. Don't think I have not. Yeah. In fact, one of the things I've been struck by is how much I want to learn ancient Greek, obviously, to read the New Testament in, find out, yeah. And
the Septuagint.
And Italian to speak in Italy and Spanish to speak in Spain.
Yeah. You know what? We need our time all over again. There's
yes,
so many
do.
Things I'd do differently. That I know every old person gets to this stage where you realize that you've wasted certain aspects of your life. And for me, it won't be that I didn't have enough sex. I think it's going to be that I wasted my time of learning by only reluctantly learning. I mean, even my art college days, I thought I was getting a lot from it. But I saw the other day someone on Substack had put something about this young iconographer who studied under Aidan Hart.
Yeah.
And his stuff is beautiful and brilliant. And he doesn't just do art painting, writing of icons. He does stone carving and wood carving and all of the stuff that Aidan does. And he studied, I think, at the Royal College. And I'm thinking, if I'd already got into the whole God thing at an earlier age, I'd have flung myself into my 5 years of university, what with the foundation degree and MA. I'd have wanted to get into iconography then. I'd have had a real purpose. I'd have had drive. I'd have wanted to use all of those years to actually learn, rather than just treating them as a great time to drink coffees in cafes, look moody, wear different hats, and shag women. It's kind of like,
I know,
not that was wasted time, but I could have used my time so much better, and now I could be the country's leading iconographer and stone carver and all sorts.
Just imagine if God was suddenly to intervene now and say, I shall give you your wish, Dick. I shall take away all those shacks. They have, as if they have never been. See how much better you feel. It is true. I'm not sitting here thinking, if only I'd had more. Actually, I don't know about that. I don't know whether I'm necessarily thinking that. If only I'd.
It's not the overriding
thing. I do wish that I'd learned more languages earlier and traveled more, because I think you need to travel to be able to get to practice that. I wish I'd spent time living in Russia. I wouldn't have minded time somewhere in the Arab world learning Arabic, say.
All of these things.
I would love to have a musical skill. I mean, to carry on with the piano or something, to be able to sing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have taken up bell ringing earlier.
I've joined our choir.
Have you?
Hmm.
What are you?
A bass.
Are you?
And I want to be doing the chanting in the services. So that's kind of late fulfillment of a long-standing ambition, because of course I was in the school choir at my prep school.
Do you have to go to choir practice or what?
Yeah, I think there is only one once a month, and it's after Divine Liturgy. No, after Typica. So the service that we do without a priest. And it's difficult because you're supposed to be able to read music to do it. And of course, you've got the four different parts. And the poor choir mistress is trying to get everyone to do their particular part. And I can't sight read singing.
No.
It's going to be difficult to do. So what I've actually done is I've worked out what it is on my bass guitar. I brought the sheet music home and I've worked out what it is. So I'll be able to play it on my bass and then learn it and sing it. A bit of a convoluted way. But there's a particular hymn that we do. And for us, hymns sound like chants. And when it works, it's going to be beautiful. And it's quite easy. But that whole singing in parts, in harmony, is, I think, what makes Orthodox music so appealing. It's a goosebumps time. You know, the hairs on the back of your arms are standing up.
Have you thought
beautiful
about possibly having a few singing lessons? Because that would help you with the reading the music, maybe.
Possibly. But I think I'd rather stick with being in the choir and kind of learning stuff from memory. I mean, there's things I'd rather be doing with my time.
Yes, I just think that it would give employ to a singing teacher. And well, that, but you know what I mean. That I think worthwhile skills are
I agree.
Paying for.
Yeah. I mean, I can sort of read music. You can look at a note and work out what it is. And don't forget, I'll be reading off the bass clef. So it's not every good bird does fly.
No, it's F-A-C-E, isn't it? Yeah. Or no, is that...
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not.
No, it's the other one.
F-A-C-E is
That's
also...
F-A-C-E and every good bird does fly, or every good boy deserves food.
But it's
slightly different.
Great big dogs eat grass.
Is it?
Yeah. I think so.
Cows eat grass.
All cows eat grass.
Yeah.
Why would the great big dogs eat grass? They wouldn't.
Yeah.
All cows eat grass.
But interestingly, they're all technically notes, aren't they? It's not like you've gone with a letter K or something.
That you see, I'm no fool.
Yeah. Big dogs.
Great big dogs eat grass.
And they don't eat grass.
I have been reading Bruce Robinson's book on Jack the Ripper.
All right.
Called They All
You Know
Love,
Bruce, don't you?
They All Love Jack. Yeah, I do. Well, I mean, I say know him. I mean, I hung out with him once. I went to his house in Herefordshire many, many years ago.
Herefordshire? Whereabouts was he?
Can't remember. Somewhere remote.
Herefordshire is.
I think it was
even Hereford when, is remote.
I think when Withnell and I was Withnell and I was re-released or something, or there was some sort of anniversary. In fact, it was the anniversary edition of the screenplay.
And it came out as a special edition book.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went to see him. But anyway, he's written it's a big book. A boy discovered it for me, and it's like 800 or 900 pages. And he does go on a bit. I mean, he has become totally obsessed. But what I did learn was that I had John Hamer on the pod talking about Jack the Ripper, and he told me what he'd read from another author who claimed that, yes, it was a bunch of Freemasons from the Royal Lodge who'd assassinated a series of women because to hide the fact that the Duke of whatever, the King's son, had impregnated this woman and this couldn't be allowed, you know, the bastard child, and something to do with Walter Sickert, the painter. Anyway, it's clear reading Robinson's account that this is not the case. This was just what you realise is that the reason that there are so many conflicting stories about Jack the Ripper is because they don't want you to know the truth. And the reason they don't want you to know the truth is that it was committed by a Freemason and covered up by Freemasons, because the police were all the senior police were Freemasons in those days, possibly still are. And the man who did it was a Freemason in the Royal Lodge. And his name was Michael Maybrick.
Right.
And he was, this is extraordinary. He was the most successful singer-songwriter of the era. He was bigger than Gilbert and Sullivan, and he made an absolute fortune. I mean, the sheet music from his songs enabled him to have a string of properties, fantastic.
Because it was all about the sheet music back then, wasn't it? Obviously, you couldn't buy records.
He was also
CDs.
He was also a concert singer. He was also in the Artists' Rifles, which was this sort of fancy regiment for composers or musicians, painters.
I thought the Artists' Rifles was formed in the
Artists'
First
Rifles
World War.
Later became the Territorial SAS, I think.
Yeah, 21
SAS, I think, became the Artists' Rifles. But at the time, it was just a kind of boutique military unit for artsy fartsy types. I mean, Alma Tadema was one of them, and all the painters of that era, that you name them, they were all in this particular unit,
right?
With its fancy clubhouse and stuff.
Was it actual army unit, or was it like a militia?
They were like sort of volunteer.
Well, the volunteer regiments were quite a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Like yeomans.
I don't know whether they saw any action.
Right.
We can maybe have a look. You can Google it now. Did the...
What year was it all?
1880s.
Right.
Have you got your...
Yeah. No, it's good. Well, it immediately comes up when you do Artists' Rifles. It says 21 yeah. SAS Reserve.
But it was, can you not tell you, does it not tell you about the history of it?
Yeah. 2nd of November 2019 marked the 30th anniversary. No, I was just saying it's the anniversary there. Right, it's got a picture of them in 1864. No. In 1884, and they're all in grey with policeman style helmets.
Does it name who the commanding officer is? Officer commanding.
The Artists' Rifles Regiment was formed in 1859 by art student Edward Starling. Interesting, Starling. It was a volunteer regiment and formed out of the widespread fear of a French invasion. Many of those who joined were artists, actors, musicians and architects, and its first headquarters was located at Burlington House. Its first commanders were the painters Henry Wyndham Phillips and Frederick Leighton.
There you are.
Creativity and beauty were at the core of the Artists' Rifles. This may seem an odd combination for an army regiment, but one can see both qualities even in the regimental cap badge, which this shows is very fancy. Yeah, a good rabbit hole there.
Yeah, interesting. So this guy...
A good one to reenact.
He was gay, probably.
Yeah.
Hence the kind of misogyny and the killings, the sort of horrible things that he did to his victim. But he killed them in Masonic ritual style.
Mm-hmm.
And the Masonic code at the time, and probably still is, I don't know, probably certainly I would have thought at the higher degrees, is that even if one of your brothers is a murderer or guilty of treason, your duty is to him as a Mason. You can't betray him. So there was the Ripper, aka Maybrick, killing all these women in horrible fashions and sending these taunting letters with these Masonic clues, Freemasonic clues in all these kind of codes and stuff. There was one of the early killings. He painted on the walls. the word, some slogan with the word Jews in it, but Jews was spelt J-U-W-E-S. And this was, the police pretended that this was, he was illiterate and he couldn't spell Jews properly, but it wasn't that. It was a, it was a reference to three characters from Masonic folklore, something like Jubilo, Jubilee, and Jubilar or something, who were these three characters. And so the way he cut the women up were sort of like a real life enactment of Masonic threats and rituals and things. And the police, the guy in charge, felt honor bound as a Mason not to be able to,
right,
not to follow these leads successfully.
So any other red herring was encouraged.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the people who've written about the field of ripperology is full, mm-hmm, of Freemasons covering up for their bros.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. So you're well out of it, Dick.
Hmm. So, is this book out now, or is it?
It came out a while ago. It's very interesting how quickly books die. There's a quarterly magazine I get called Slightly Foxed, which just consists of these delightful essays written by book lovers of books that they've enjoyed from the past. And so many of them are out of print. Even books books from the 90s, say, that were probably quite well reviewed at the time, but they just disappear. The book trade is designed to push stuff in volume. Well, to push stuff, I think, that serves a particular agenda often. I think. I mean, things like,
well, they're going to be doing time. Surely books are almost something that they will regret, because once you've got a book, that's it. The facts, or as they're laid down at the time, are there with you.
No.
So you buy the books and they're there forever.
No.
They can't change
that
them.
That is the interesting thing. They are very, very good at, I mean, the Illuminati and Illuminati adjacent people, they've got they're very interested in the secondhand book trade. I mean, they've got all they make sure that all the occult books are either, you know, not available to the public, and they get them for their own private collections, or they destroy them. And they destroy books that give information about the true information about the past. So gradually all the accurate guides to what happened in the past are taken away from us. And you've got to track them down.
Antiquarian book dealing. And I found this through my reading of the Phil Rickman books that I like, you know, the ones about Merrily Watkins, the priest. There's one set in the world of book dealership, and nearly all these antiquarian books, it seems, they survive not on the day-to-day people coming by and buying an old book on flowers or an out-of-print first edition of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle or something like that. It's nearly all on the occulty type ones, which they keep in the back rooms, which fall into their hands, and you know, the big money changes hands with things like that specialist books that they come across that they know the market for. So the dusty old sort of black books TV show style bookshop is probably just a front for what's really going on in the background, because if you've taken over someone's estate and you find these dusty old things, you won't know what they are, but they might.
They
and so
might.
You'll go to them, won't you,
if you accidentally pick up a bird book.
Hmm.
Which is Birds of America by Ojibon.
Hmm.
And then you put it in a box. I'm testing you to see whether you've seen you haven't seen it, have you?
No.
The successor series to Detectorists.
Right. Oh, gosh. Right. No, I do want to watch that, but I don't get any BBC. So I've got to wait for some sort of channel
that's really good.
To play. You like it, do you?
It's very good.
Oh, good. I'm glad you didn't dash my hopes with that one.
No, what he's done, what's he called, the man from...
Mackenzie Crook.
He's very, very clever. So he's managed to recreate all the charm and the whole mood and the sort of the wistfulness and the Englishness of detectorists, but with a completely different plot line and characters. It's very, very good. Except this one's in suburban Manchester.
Right. But I thought he'd use some of the characters from
Detectorists. Yeah.
Okay.
But they're not detectorists. There's not a metal detector in sight. Although I did notice an Edward the First, possibly Penny, appeared in one episode. Right.
A little nod, an Easter egg.
A little nod, yeah.
Right. You know, he does come across as a thinker, Mackenzie Crook. He doesn't love the publicity, and he comes across as a very thoughtful individual.
He does. I mean, I feel bad that I should even have raised the subject of TV because it is evil and is a brainwashing device. Yeah. And yet.
Yeah. Well, it's another case of we have to live in their world and there's no point in denying ourselves the little pleasures. It does mean that whenever you watch a film or a TV show, you're always watching it on at least two levels. The level that's presented to you and the one that looks in at all the clues as to what they're trying to do.
I suddenly thought, I was going to ask you, I have we spoken about Doc Malice?
No, I think that was possibly something that we talked about over lunch when you came over.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. When you came to Worcester last.
So I've been kind of wrestling with my conscience. Like, on the one hand, Christopher Booker used to say never get into a fight with a chimney sweep, and of course Christ enjoins us to turn the other cheek, but at the same time he did overturn the moneylenders' tables, and he cursed the fig tree just because it didn't give him any fruit. And have you where are you on righteous rage and stuff and unforgiveness and is the job?
It's one of the trickiest parts of the whole Christian deal. You know, being told not to judge when really we're doing it all the time, aren't we? All the time, every day. You're making your assessment of someone, of what they've said, of things they've done. It's hard to know just how far is acceptable with doing that, because it's in human nature to do so. And then there's the forgiving. And then there's the... we had a discussion the other day in the pub that was a semi sort of Thursday Circle-ish type meetup. And
yeah.
Talking with George, who's now fully Catholic, about whether or not... He said you should admonish people who are sinning. It's one of the things they're encouraged to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, isn't that the same as judging? Sure, but then do you let people carry on doing something that's wrong and just ignore
them?
I
don't think it quite comes under judging. I mean, I'm wondering whether one's allowed to kind of smite and then forgive or admonish and then... I think if somebody... if somebody behaves very badly... oh, thank you. If somebody behaves badly and sort of go around kind of oblivious to the toxicity of their behavior and the damage that they at least tried to do, I kind of think they sort of need to be exposed rather than allowed to get... I mean, if Jack... Okay, this chap isn't Jack the Ripper, but if Jack the Ripper is going around and is going around unchecked, is it really the Christian thing to not call him out?
I think that's where the George's argument would hold, whereby you do have to do what you can to stop sinners sinning. I suppose it's that whole greater good expression, isn't it? It's like,
well, that's the thing. I've become conscious that there are people who do what we do. That I think most of us in this kind of conspiracy realm are in it because we're seekers after truth, and we want to get to the bottom of things, and the calling is higher than any kind of other considerations like earning a living or stuff. I mean, I'd be doing this stuff even if it wasn't my living. And if somebody kind of breaks the house rules, as it were, and sort of starts attacking his own people gratuitously.
Yeah. That's the bit that bothers me, the attacking your own people. It's sort of like, well, we're none of us perfect, but unless you're quite clearly, and this is probably what they believe of you, they think they found a reason to show that you are not who you purport to be.
Yeah, but I really doesn't hold much water. I've written a long piece, but I haven't published it yet. But largely because I've been held back by I was going to finish it, but my fingers aren't working at the moment. I don't really want to name names, but.
Well, just don't.
No. What I mean is, by not naming names, what I mean is that people on my side are saying, look, you can't let this one pass because it's not just about you. It's about all of us.
Hmm.
And I take the point that this is actually bigger than me. I'm just thinking aloud here. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, well, clearly what's going to be the answer is to do the correct Christian thing. But that's what we started this discussion about. What is the correct Christian approach to this? But it's not cut and dry.
Well, we know it's thou shalt not kill. Okay, right. So
so that's out.
I don't cover his ass anyway, so...
Bearing false witness.
Yeah, you see, he's born false witness, hasn't he?
Hmm.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of...
That's a bit of a no-no, yeah.
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 And I think, actually, you've clarified that one. You've clarified that one, yeah.
Good.
He's born false witness. And that ain't good.
No.
And,
you know, if you are a seeker of the truth, bearing false witness is... the worst thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, you know, doing it knowingly.
Yeah. I think so.
To score points.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Yeah. It is horrible when our side turns on each other, and there's a lot of it about. I mean, it's like there's not enough good targets out there.
This is the thing. You've got the entire Epstein list, guest list, who did unspeakable things. I mean, look at Hillary Clinton,
John Podesta.
You know what
someone has pointed out recently about that?
Yeah.
You're very naive if you think it's just Epstein. He's just going to be one of many such people who had that sort of level of connection. And that made me think, blimey, what if he's just the tip of the iceberg?
So who else are you thinking?
Well, I don't know who else it can possibly be, but who would have known about Epstein had it not... somehow blown open. I mean, is he the one we're being allowed to know about? Will it be dealt with? And then will it make everyone think the whole problem's gone away?
All I'm saying is I would feel very uncomfortable if I were to discover that in between writing charming sitcoms about English people, Mackenzie Crook was running a... I mean,
yeah, but it wouldn't be Mackenzie Crook, would it?
Who would you like to be?
This is going to be a very incriminating question. If I was to come up with a name,
I'm not saying who do you think is guilty. I say who would it make you happy to discover was guilty? I mean, there are obvious ones like Piers Morgan and Gary Lineker.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Who would be the David Attenborough? That would be I think I've just won, haven't I?
did you see how well my David Attenborough tweet did the other day? I think
What did you say?
It was me having a conversation with my normie colleagues at work, and one of them sat round the coffee machine. One of them goes, "David Attenborough, he must be one of the most loved people in the country. In fact, I can't imagine anyone not liking him." And I was like, let me just say, and I started spouting off on him, and the last thing I put was a simultaneous eye roll from all of my colleagues, because they just think I'm contrary for the sake of being contrary, but they haven't got a clue, and they didn't even know what the word Malthusian meant. And even if they'd looked it up, they'd probably dismiss it. But yeah, it's
that feeling you had.
But it touched a nerve.
That feeling you had when you with your work colleagues. I did get a bit of a glimpse of that in the operating theatre when I mentioned Merovingian blood sacrifices, and then I talked about adrenochrome harvesting and stuff. I thought maybe I've pushed it too far. I don't know.
One of us pushing it too far. That almost never happens.
The thing is, they don't say. They don't, because I suppose.
No, they just go a bit cold on you.
You're a patient or whatever. Yeah. They call you Mr. or Sir. And I suppose they probably feel they have some sort of professional relationship that they have to maintain with you.
Hmm. I had a similar thing, and he may well be listening now, but I just met my new accountant. And I don't know much about him, but I was spouting off and I was oversharing, and he was interested in everything I had to say. And so I was just going on and on. I was like, I have no idea whether he's on board with any of this. And he was just being so pleasant that I just carried straight on. And it's dangerous territory. I could be saying completely the wrong thing.
I've done this.
But I'm an oversharer, and I think you are too.
Yes. Yes. That was one of the things that God did when he was making us, and wanted to kind of, he didn't want to make us too perfect.
He's done a really good job there.
They are faultless at the moment. What characteristics can I?
I'm going to roll my dice, my million-sided dice. It's come up oversharers.
Oversharing, yes. I'm going to give this one a stupid past. I'm going to make him ring bells later on, but I'm going to make him into hunting, even though he can't ride very well.
Yeah, and I got bald head, moustache, reenactment. I've got a few other weird rolls of the million-sided dice, but they all keep you grounded to some degree.
Have you, before we go, I know that you don't like to overrun.
I might go to the pub because it's Friday evening.
Oh, well done.
Yeah.
I feel like a slight cold coming on. I'm sure.
I think I've got it. I mean, I've had a runny nose since bloody summer, but I put that down to the sodding chemtrails. But whatever it is they're putting up there is not agreeing with me, or anyone for that matter.
I just wanted to warn you of a podcast I've got coming up. I mean, it's out to subscribers, so you probably technically you can listen to it now, because I think I give you listening free, don't I? It's with what's he called? My brain's gone blank. Sir Escanor.
Oh yeah, I saw that come up, and okay. I didn't
so
know.
So Sir Escanor is, I mean, he's a top on, he's very, very awake. He's been awake for a very long time, and he's very, very good on calling out all the kind of geopolitical trickery and stuff. And he's not full.
Is he an actual knight of the realm?
No, he's not. He's Greek.
Right.
Formerly Orthodox, but this is the story I'm about to tell you. So I thought he was going to do, just tell me all more stuff about how the world works and stuff. And, but he said, but he's gone so far down the rabbit hole that he thinks that the reason we haven't been killed is not because they can't be asked, but because we're actually doing their work for them, and that we are pointing stuff out that they want pointed out because we
Who's
are.
Who's we? You and me?
Yeah,
I'm up for killing, am I?
No. We are by revealing everything, the whole rottenness of the system. We are ushering in the moment when the Luciferian yang to the satanic yin comes in,
right?
And so we are paving the way for this moment where people are suddenly relieved that all this apparent all
so
this
the mask
evil has apparently
can slip
been
swept completely
away, and actually the new thing is just as bad. And then he tells me about his finding what he discovered about Jesus that convinced him that that the Bible too is a massive psyop. So he treats me to all this stuff, and he says one of the things he says is quite interesting. He says, "Do you know how old the disciples were?"
Well, I assume they were young men in their 20s when Jesus
they weren't.
Them.
No? And if you Google this, you'll find that this is the case. They were about 15.
What, 15?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jesus was older. And so, but the inference he drew on that was that there was something slightly creepy and sort of slightly homoerotic about, and that actually Jesus was just a kind of sort of rebadged sort of Eleusinian mystery cult stroke sort of I found his argument quite shocking and you know, whoa, when he was telling it to me. But I've since looked into, there's another guy who talks about this stuff, who's made it his shtick that Jesus was a pedo, that Jesus was whatever, you know, an alleged Greek scholar. And I think his arguments are actually, they've been pretty comprehensively debunked by other language scholars, you know, other Greek and other Greek scholars. But I suppose what I'm saying is, when you listen to the pod, just go in there, sort of
brace yourself.
Yeah, brace yourself. Yeah,
yeah. I'm not going to like that very much.
No, it's all right. I think it's good. It's good to be exposed to these ideas because actually, I think one needs to know what arguments are being used by
the. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 I mean, I keep falling back on it. Whenever I get my doubts about my chosen route in faith, I fall back on things like the books you lent me. And I think about the monks on Mount Athos. And I think, well, you're going to say all those guys are wrong. They're regularly communing with the saints. And, you know, they've got an information fast track that we could only imagine. You know, it's not just the Bible. They've got their own ancient scriptures there. They've got direct knowledge. It's unassailable, really.
This is my take too. And in our own little way, we do have, God does give us little tiny glimpses. Yeah, hello, here I am.
Yeah. God winks.
God winks. He does.
Yeah, so it is worth pointing out to the naysayers that it isn't just the Bible that we're hanging on to. You know, you can't debunk bits of the Bible and then expect our whole faith to fall apart, because there's so much more to it than that.
Especially when you do not read Isaiah, or Isaiah, as the Americans call it, I'm calling him.
Yeah, I think we say Isaiah in Orthodoxy as well.
When did you last read him?
I think we've been doing, have we been doing Bible study on him? No, Hebrews. Lately.
When do you do Bible study?
It happens various times. There's two sets going on at the moment. There's one when we're doing Revelation, and there's another for Hebrews.
That's a toughie.
But it's obviously all from an Orthodox perspective.
And where do you do, in Worcester?
Yeah, at my church.
How far is it to drive?
10-minute drive. It's very close to where I took you swimming that time in the River
Teme. So it's really close.
Really close.
Oh, no wonder.
I'm very lucky. It was one of the, sorry about the nose. It's one of the reasons I decided it was calling me, because
obviously
there's people who have to travel halfway across the country to get to that church every week, and for me it's a 10-minute drive. So that was another, you know, you've lucked out there.
And yes.
Moving closer to my new name, which you've given strong approval to. So when we get baptized, we're meant to take a baptismal name. Mm-hmm. And there's a Paisios in my church.
They all go for the big names, don't they?
Well, you're not going to go for St. Bob, are you? It's you're going to go for a name that has a bit of resonance.
I don't believe there is a St. Bob.
No, but there's probably a Robert. Is there a St. Robert even? I don't even know. There's going to be Roberto or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, I'm looking like choosing Wolfston, who was the bishop, the last Anglo-Saxon bishop to still be serving under the Normans. And he was born near where you live, served here and Gloucestershire and London. Became the patron saint of vegetarians and peasants.
And how was he martyred?
I don't think he was. I don't think the most of the modern day bishops were particularly seen off in a horrific way. I think. Oh no, he died whilst washing the feet of a parishioner.
I would rather go that way than being sawn in half by a wooden saw.
Given the choice, it sounds really quite appealing, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it does. That's not a bad way to go. Which is why the only disciple you want to be is John, even though I like James.
The only one not martyred horribly, yeah.
Not martyred at all.
No. Yeah, just died.
And he was Jesus' favourite, or so he tells us.
The one he loved.
The one he loved.
Yeah. Anyway, lots more conversations for another time.
Well, exactly. We've done well. So that's it, isn't it?
Looks like it. So we've done your finger. That's the main thing. This was the James's finger podcast.
This was the main thing.
So now we know. And now you can pick your nose with great efficiency and accuracy.
Well, yeah.
You can even pull your brains out of your nostril
Egyptian. I'm wearing sling clothes. I tell you, the other thing, talk about getting gratuitously angry. I was furious this morning. You know what I was furious with?
Getting dressed?
Cuffs. Yeah, cuffs. Why does everything have to have a cuff? Why has this got stupid... Because everything has a cuff when you've got a sling, and when you've got a plaster cast. And it's a real pain.
It's all about... T-shirts and jumpers for me, but if you've got cuffs, then re-examine your wardrobe. Enough of the shirts already.
Yeah, okay. Right. Good. Well, that's it then, isn't it?
Looks like it.
Thank you. I hope your cold gets better.
Yeah, well, it doesn't show any signs of it, but yeah, let's hope.
Oh, one more thing. Dear beloved viewers and listeners, I just want to say extra thank you to you, because I've heard that it's really, really hard to upload my podcasts. Apparently, the powers that be, make it extra, extra bloody difficult. So thank you for sticking with me and making the effort. I mean, I know I'm worth it, but it's good to know that you know I'm worth it too. So thank you. Even those of you who don't give me money, even the freeloaders, I love you just for making the effort and for being my friend and for sticking with me through thick and thin. So thank you. And thank you, Dick.
Okay, speak to you soon then, brother. Lots of love.
Okay,